All right, make sure you're in fellowship as here in Colossians, Paul's relating to the struggle of the ministry of the overseer. He as an apostle in this regard. Obviously, that responsibility falls on the shoulders of the pastor-teacher today. But his struggles in regards to maintaining the fidelity to the truth of doctrine in light of the opposition that comes to infiltrate, especially the local churches of whom he has an authority in regards to their persons. And he recognizes and makes clear the importance of the purity of truth as it pertains to its impact upon positive volition. No matter where positive volition may exist, even those whom we may never see, through the integrity of the truth of doctrine as it's handed down through others and falls on the ears of that positive individual otherwise that's out there, it will have its desired effect in commending itself in terms of that individual's any seeking that they have in terms of God. Obviously, we're speaking of the truth of doctrine in terms of its witness, both phase one and phase two, as it may be appropriate. And Paul makes very clear this principle as he makes reference here that his struggle for the fight of truth is not only on their behalf and the Colossians, whom he's never seen, but also those at Laodicea and others who have not personally seen his face, ending verse 1 in that vein. And we're dealing here the mention of Laodicea, why it's mentioned in particularly in this context. And it's mentioned four other times in the epistle, obviously five times altogether. And it's closed, as we saw in verses 13, 15, and 16, used two times in chapter 4. But also, you had the church at Hierapolis that is mentioned, and the church in Nympha's house that is mentioned in that vein. Why Laodicea? And most commentaries, at least the ones that I've run across, simply make reference and gloss over the fact that it's in the general geographical location, and that's the only a real impact it's designed to have. But I see it as having greater impact in terms of the spiritual significance of his presence here in this context. And that was, as we dealt with there in point 54, some 35 years from Paul issuing this warning from 61 to 96 A.D., Laodicea will be rebuked by Christ for the failure of the messenger and church to heed to Paul's warning to keep on fighting the fight to ensure the pure truth of doctrine is adhered. Revelation 3, 14 through 18, in one the final seventh church, if you will, the message of the prophecies given to the messenger, the pastor there, the overseer there, in terms of their local churches and critiqued by Christ, Laodicea is last on the list. And he rebukes the church, obviously, for being lukewarm. They're neither hot nor cold in that vein. To the messenger of the church in Laodicea write, Revelation 3:14, the Amen, the faithful and true witness, the beginning of the creation of God, says this, I know your works, verse 15, that you're neither cold nor hot. I would that you were cold or hot. To go one direction or another is the idea here. To commit yourself one way or the other. This local church does not have a true commitment. Cold versus hot looks at those who otherwise just simply would reject the truth altogether, just go live their life, not have any part of it. Hot would be obviously tapping into the truth in its absolute sense of purity in terms as a church and its witness and what it holds to and how it applies. And they're neither one of these states. Instead, they are in a condition known as lukewarmness. That's verse 16. So because you are lukewarm and neither hot nor cold, I will spit you out of my mouth. Literally, he says, I will vomit you out of my mouth. And it recognizes because of their cavalier attitude, the superficial attitude, lack of study, if you will, in terms of the truth of doctrine and the sound, under sound hermeneutics, the science and art of interpretation through the gift, etc. They have come into a condition where they're in a mixture of truth and error. And hence, while they may have a lot of zeal in what they want to do, the error of their understanding and truth of doctrine puts them out of step in regards to the marching orders of what they should be doing. Versus on the end of the coin, simply having misinformation and hence turning around and misapplying based on that particular situation. And because they are that way, he's going to remove their lampstand. And obviously, this, as we know, as is prophetic intention, refers to the church universal in the last days. And verse 17 here, because you say I am rich and have become wealthy, knowing, looking at the economic situation of believers at this point in time in its prophetic sense. In the last days, most believers have ample stuff, and obviously, it almost seems like it's directly directed to our country. To me, you read that verse. Okay, U.S., just because you think you're rich, and because we have advertised ourselves over the last couple of millennia as being a Christian nation, see, etc. Though it doesn't, we're not limited. I don't limit it to that. But anyway, he says, the believer is saying, I am rich and have become wealthy and have need of nothing. They take their physical experience of life, of acquisitions and things of that nature, of being well off economically or whatever, living grace is generally provided for them. They take that as a sign from God that they're fine spiritually. These are people who do not recognize that Satan prospers his own. The world prospers its own. You want to line up with the world. You want to hook into it. You rub their back. They'll rub your back. See. And the spiritual reality, in contrast to the physical reality of what they're experiencing, is then related in the remainder of verse 17. You do not know that you are wretched and miserable and poor and blind and naked. That's all descriptive of being lukewarm. Not cold, but lukewarm. So the whole attitude of holding God with one hand and trying to hang on to the world with the other hand, negative volition in that regards, is described for us and characterized for us as being wretched, spiritually miserable, spiritually poor, the SG3 that it robs them of. And spiritually blind, they're running around like a chicken with a head cut off, you know, the wings flopping. Some weird things you see in the world, that's one of them, if you've ever decapitated a chicken. My grandparents grew up, they had a farm, so I partly grew up on a farm, and I saw that happen. I can imagine how big my eyes were the first time I saw that. As grandma takes a chicken in one hand and a chicken in the other hand and wrings their necks immediately. And then my uncle comes in, hey, watch this. Bam! Pops their head off and watch the bodies float around. And the amazing thing is their eyes will stay open until when those eyes close, that body just goes bam. At least that's what I saw. Anyway, people might be able to back me up on that half chickens. But anyway, in verse 18, so the condition of lukewarmness. You know, to think that, oh, it's just fine if you can go to church somewhere. You know, you don't have to believe all the Bible. You don't have to believe all the doctrines. You can water down this doctrine. You can dismiss this aspect of doctrine. When you do that, obviously you're absorbing and you're filling the void in with your own new little human viewpoint philosophy that you want to adhere to in that regard. Problem is that you're putting yourself in a condition that is despicable before God. To me, it's almost mind-blowing that you look at this lukewarm state, and they're the one church that, even though warning was given that he's going to remove the lampstand from the previous church, it wasn't ipso facto, I am going to. Here, it's ipso facto, I will vomit you out of my mouth. That's a future reality. See? So, this whole idea, you know, as long as you're going to church somewhere, well, if they're not teaching the truth of doctrine, and it's a mixture of truth and error, you're in a lukewarm situation. And that's what you're adhering to. And the prescription then is given for us in verse 18. I advise you to buy from me gold refined by fire. The gold here is symbolic of the truth of doctrine. Fire is also known as a refining process in regards to the precious metals. It gets rid of impurities, see. And hence, whatever amount of gold that might be, the matter of truth that might be incorporated in regards to a lukewarm church. And we're not saying that they buy lies all across the board. We're not saying that. But because they have the impurity of the human viewpoint in regards to it, they need to purge that. They need to purify what truth they do have that they are adhering to. And that's the idea here in terms of refining by fire, that you may become rich. This is spiritual wealth. That's SG3 in white garments that reflects your works done in righteousness, that you may clothe yourselves. Instead of being spiritually naked, obscene, see, that's kind of the idea. And that the shame of your nakedness may not be revealed. That you get to the Bema seat and there's no SG3, no rewards associated with you. You leave yourself exposed in regards to what kind of Christian you really were. You were lukewarm. But look, all I sacrificed and did this and did that. Yeah, but look at the, how you operate in that vein. You know, you abandon your NPR. You think your whole world's your canon. Violating doctrine elsewhere, all over the place. People don't recognize that a sin is simply a disobedience to God. If you disobey God, it's a sin. Now, sin is generally expressed in the way that we see through the SGA. Lying, deceiving, slander, verbal sins, mental attitude sins, lust, etc. But all those reflect some disobedience to the truth of Bible doctrine. So you violate doctrine, you're sinning. So people go out there, and when they want to do things that are outside of the requirements and stipulations provided for us under the mystery doctrine that Paul is dealing with in the New Testament for the church, all their extracurricular programs, you know, and all that other stuff, well, you can figure it out. The shame of your nakedness may not be revealed, and ISAB, the ISAB is the doctrine that they need for their spiritual insight to anoint your eyes. Your spiritual eyes, your soulish eyes, that you may see. So that verse makes it clear that sound doctrine is available in this condition, such as in the example of the Church of Philadelphia, which is the preceding church, number 6 there before Laodicea, which they are only commended. There's no negative critique by Christ in regards to that church. The Philadelphia church. They hold the sound doctrine. And that is available. So, no matter how you might want to categorize the mention of Laodicea, you can't dismiss the prophetic reality that's attached to the mention of this church in this context. Paul struggling to keep pure the truth of doctrine. the church at Ephesus, the first church, of which the media post-apostolic period, if you will, apostolic post, media post, they did well of keeping the false teachers out. Where they went limp was in their loss of zeal for application, their first love, if you will. That is, the love of Christ under divine good production and love for the brothers, etc. But anyway, another aspect of the puzzle in the seven message to the seven churches. So, 55, allowing the leaven of human viewpoint or false doctrine to enter the body of Christ created a, quote, lukewarm syndrome of an admixture of truth and error at the message of Laodicea and in Revelation, which they are geographically not far away from the church of Colossae. But either way. 56, this church headed by a shepherd or messenger, the angelos, in the Greek, which means messenger, ultimately refused to exert the same effort as Paul to sustain the, quote, pure gold, end quote, of Bible doctrine. That's the emphasis that we read there, to buy from me gold refined by fire. Now, the irony there is doctrine's free. How do you buy Bible doctrine? Obviously, we understand the command, royal imperative, in regards to application of giving. We understand that. But otherwise, it's not necessary. If you want doctrine, it's free. And the emphasis there is once you put in as much effort in regards to pursuing God's plan for your life under truth, pure truth of doctrine, that you do the rest of the step of life. You know. So, point 56 again here. Let me read it again. This church, the Laodicean church, headed by a shepherd messenger, ultimately refused to exert the same effort as Paul to sustain the pure gold of Bible doctrine within the ranks of teaching and application, and suffered the consequences. They suffered the consequences. That local church, and this is the layer of understanding in regards to the seven churches here as they are addressed in Revelation. It was a literal local church. Every one of these churches were literal local churches at the time. They existed. And it was prophetic in terms of, and it was a critique of how these churches were spiritually at that point in time. But they also were prophetic, and they pointed to the church universal over the period of history of the church age in the different seven different periods, beginning with Ephesus, the earlier church, to Laodicea. And in that vein, that church of Laodicea, God removed their lampstand. That's what he said. I'll vomit you. I will vomit you out of my mouth. See? He's done that to many churches over the years. Again, one of the kind of the cooler things, the Church of Philadelphia, which, if I remember correctly, geographically located somewhere around Turkey in that general region today, that in that area, is the only place that historically they can document a Christian church that existed from the time of the apostles to today. Not saying that the church today is necessarily adjusted, but a Christian church has maintained and sustained its place in regards to their geographical history. But other churches, basically, they die out, go away, etc. Postulation peters out in one area, and then the church generally will fold, you know, etc. But anyway. So 57, this interpretational recognition gives clarity as to why the extraordinary number of times that Laodicea is mentioned in this letter to Colossae. In other words, its mention is not just arbitrary. Not just to fill in the blanks. I get so tired of seeing commentaries and interpreters deal with the Bible in that way. I just fill in the blank. It's just here just as a note of interest. No, it has significance. Whether you can figure it out or not. I mean, if you can't figure it out, okay, you say that. You know. But to me, that It's just lack of depth of understanding lack of due diligence in regards to one's study often in that vein for people to hold that kind of attitude. So 58, Paul's warning, as I have been alluding to quite clearly, Paul's warning has even further reaching impact for churches today, as Laodicea and Revelation is prophetic for the condition of the universal church. Each of those messages that the seven churches is representative of a time and period of history in sequential order, beginning with the apostolic era to the end of the church age, ending with the church of Laodicea and the condition of the church universal. You have the exceptions to the rule. And obviously, as that church, that critique of that church made clear, there is that exception available if people want it. But most people don't want to put in that kind of effort in regards to serving God. Okay. Well, you can serve Christ in whatever capacity He's got you for. You can take care of the transit system or something like that instead of ruling over nations, if that's what you want. Anyway. So the church overall is lukewarm. One of the phenomenons I've seen over my history is earlier on when I was younger, even being Protestant, was the division that our country still holding more or less to is Christian values, virtues and values, and biblically in that regards, was the separation of Protestantism from Roman Catholicism. And then Kennedy came in, and I remember it was a big deal in regards to voting for presidents. Well, what religion is he? And Kennedy came in, he was Roman Catholic, you know, and it was just, oh. And you had, and now that's almost gone away. It's just like everybody looks at it all in the same vein. See, and of course, that's the deterioration, that's the eroding in regards that goes on in regards to a lukewarm idea and philosophy that the church itself holds to today. And as part of the satanic design, the whole instrument of ecumenicalism, where we just need to decide our differences, just everybody love God. It used to be everybody love Jesus, now it's just everybody love God. I see stuff, you know, not that I personally stay in touch with people from my past out of the denominational world, but I do see where they have things that they may have on the websites and stuff of that nature. I keep track of some people, how they have deteriorated in that regards. It's just, you know, everybody, every religion's got some good to it, you know. Look at this, look at that. Years ago, they said, no, that's wrong. Roman Catholicism, we're not saying there's not believers that come out of that, but that's not what they teach. They teach you've got to be a member of the church to be saved. Whether you believe in Jesus Christ is secondary to that. So, you know, what can I say? That's how lukewarm we've become. The church universal today. And now it's even more and more, you know, what's ringing in my ears at Thessalonians, peace and safety. You know, well, how are you going to get that when everybody has such a diverse view in regards to a religion, etc., over the world? Well, you put aside your differences, man. And we'll just embrace one another, man. You know, light it up. Might as well. You're all smoking it. Might as well light it up. Anyway. 59. The struggle for the pastor-teacher today is to ensure that the, quote, pure gold, end quote, of doctrinal teaching is the standard MO, method of operation, for the local church while contending with those that propose different. You can't just turn a blind eye to it. When it pops up its ugly head when things like this occur. You got to address it, especially if it's having an impact. And I don't address every little piece of human viewpoint I hear. But if it has impact and influence to others around you, as your spiritual under-shepherd, I'm not much of a shepherd if I'm not looking out for you and letting you know, hey, this is wrong. If you're hearing this, this is wrong. This is not what the Bible teaches. Yeah. So those who want to come in and take issue in regards to the truth of doctrine, and again, you know, I've made it clear over the years, you know, I understand I'm not perfect either. I've had to go back and redo a passage here and there, and a verse here and there. Hopefully at least it shows some intellectual honesty on my part. But anyway, otherwise, if there is an issue, I'd like to see the documentation. I'd like to see the work. Where do you come up with this? So, I mean, how pure does a doctrine have to be? Well, there's the verse, pure gold, refined by fire. That's the level that we are striving for here at Lake Erie Bible Church. And we have been for a while, many of us. Sometimes it's up and been up and down for the history of the church. I understand that. But there are those who do not give up. And it always pays off in the long run for those who remain positive. So it's still a struggle today. Again, as I stated before, the lukewarmness of the church is pouring out of all their pores. It is a stench. That's the way I see it. When I was younger on doctrine, I came out of that. That wasn't too bad. But the more doctrine I get, the more it stinks. The more it stinks. And, you know, like walking down the aisle of a store and somebody's walked there in front of you and go, man, who waffled that one? You know, it's just bad. If that's never happened to you at a store, well, that's fine. 60, the challenge then for the body, the rest of the body overall, is to fend against those that advocate otherwise and not succumb to the pressures of a Christian world alien to the level and purity of truth modeled by Paul. Yeah, people say, well, Ken, what makes you think you're on track? What makes you think that you can have the purity of truth? I don't know. What made Paul think he could have it? I mean, obviously he did. Yeah. And there are others that agree with him. So, you know, that's why we do what we do. That's why I conduct my Bible classes the way I conduct them. So you can look for yourself. You can get in fellowship. I always give you that opportunity. If you don't avail yourself of the benefit, that's your problem, not mine. So 61, even though the truth has been initially handed down to the churches in view, here those mentioned in Lycus Valley, Laodicea and others, Hierapolis, there still remain those that seek to upset them by denigrating the truth, by putting leaven into it, some sort of leaven. See? And we know the dangers of leaven in a bad sense. A little leaven, leaven's a whole lump. You let falsehood be part of the teaching in one area, in one doctrine, it can have far-reaching impact in other areas of the individual's teaching and otherwise the thinking and application of believers in that vein. Yeah, I mean, if you don't have the spiritual gifts, the doctrine down correctly and in this order, you know, you can see how people just go off and they do goofy stuff. And it has impact not only in regards to that, but as it impacts others around them and things of that nature. So, you know, there's more to it than this superficial, lukewarm attitude that believers generally have in regards to the truth. God is an exacting God. You need to write that down in your brain computer and your soul. Either you do it His way or you're out of line and it's not going to count to your behalf in your SG3. That's the way it is. Either He's first in your life or you pay the consequences. See? So, most of us recognize that. And that's why we are still here. So here you have a situation. Epaphras taught them the truth, as well as other churches have been getting the truth through the apostolic oversight, validating that, and epistles going along with all that. There are still those that want to come in and they want to upset the apple cart, if you will. We want a new and improved church here, see, or whatever. New and improved gospel. 62, as such, the struggle remains as Paul pens this epistle to warn these believers at Colossae not to give heed to any that depart from the sound teaching they have received from Epaphras. Again, that was the validation point of verse 5 here in chapter 1. Or verse 4, excuse me. I say this in order that no one may delude you with persuasive argument. Not a single person. When we get there, you'll see it. Not a single person. Don't let a single person intrude in your life like this. See? So, but because there are those who, someone always wants to take issue with the teaching, it seems like, somewhere down the line, the warning has to be set forward to all concerned to not depart from sound teaching otherwise. 63, this struggle is a part of every adjusted pastor's niche. You know, like I said before, I'm always open in regards to anything that someone may see different. But you better have your documentation with you, as far as I'm concerned. How much work have you done on the verse? So, and I understand a lot of it is trust, but your trust is in God, not me. Even though, obviously, it coalesces together. So, 64, pastor teachers to always be on guard for those in competition or even outright aggression to the truth of doctrine seeking to infiltrate the ranks. You know, I've seen this stuff go on in other churches. Pastors soliciting another pastor's sheep, things of that nature. You know, and then some that are just overtly, verbally antagonistic and hostile in regards to the truth. Again, Acts 20:28, Paul exhorts the pastors there their responsibility of shepherding to protect in regards to their sheep, those that God allots to them. Be on guard for yourselves and for all the flock. Again, Acts 20:28. Among which the Holy Spirit has made you overseers to shepherd the church of God which He purchased with His own blood. To be on guard, to always be on top in regards to that which is introduced as part of the function and a goal, etc., in regards to the local church of which one has an authority. And if those wolves in sheep's clothing, as they come in sometimes they're sheep with wolves' clothing, but anyway, you know, Got to stay on top of it. Obviously, things like that generally are revealed as necessary to deal with it. 65, for Paul, his adversaries were numerous. 1 Corinthians 16, 8, and 9. Some people, some have come in, they have bent the ears of others, and they listen to them, and where are they at today? You hear through the rumor, if they go anywhere, some Sunday church somewhere, telling everybody how much they love Jesus. Okay. Save it. Tell him at the bema, man. Just run up there and just say, "Oh, I love you so much." You won't do that. 16, 8, 9. Again, my humor will probably get me in trouble one more time in life. "But I shall remain in Ephesus until Pentecost," Paul says to the church of Corinth. "For a wide door for effective service has opened to me, and there are many adversaries." Many adversaries. In terms of his ministry as an apostle and evangelizing, starting churches, all that's part of his operations, etc., in that vein. It's not just a few, it was a lot. 2 Timothy 4, 14 and 15. He not only had the pagan world, the Greek culture around him, but he also had the religious world of the Jews in their attacks against him. His own countrymen. Jesus wasn't kidding around when he says, "Hey, I'm going to show him how much he's got to suffer." 2 Timothy 4, 14 and 15. Here he makes mention, even by name, of one Alexander the coppersmith. "Did me much harm. The Lord will repay him according to his works. Be on guard against him yourself, for he vigorously opposed our teaching." So you got these spiritual jackasses that exist out there in the world that will actually go in and try to teach another man's sheep and tear him down and take him away from the ministry. To tear him down. That's their goal. That just comes from a source of hatred that sometimes it's hard to understand. But it's spiritually inclined. That's the thing, it's generally always spiritually inclined. The reason why they hate someone that teaches the truth is because of the truth that they taught. Wait a second, I didn't do nothing to you. You didn't have to listen to me. You go somewhere else. You go down to the street and find your little denominational church that has LGBTs and XYZs in them. You know, do what you want. Anyway, 66, this included those at one time a part of sound teaching otherwise. It's not always just those outside, but it may come within their own ranks. And that's another reality. People just has some sacred cow that they never really let go of over years, and all of a sudden they just can't handle it anymore, and they'll blow up over that. See, Philippians 3, 17 through 19, Paul talks about, "Brothers, join in following my example and serve those who walk according to the pattern you have in us." That's a pattern of Bible doctrine in an application. The wisdom comes through the application of that doctrine. "For many walk." These are believers. These are believers that he's dealing with here. "Of whom I often told you, and now tell you even weeping, they are enemies of the cross of Christ." That's because they deny the spirituality, the effect of rebound and the maturity adjustment at some level. When you do something, okay, Let me put it to you this way. When you do something and encourage someone to do something that's anti-doctrine, that's against doctrine, then you have robbed that person of the effect of divine good production in SG3 that person otherwise would have got through Christ's work on the cross. You are an enemy in that sense. See? Here, obviously, go all the way down to trying to tear down the gospel message, phase one, faith plus works, you know, etc., as tends to dominate the scene. But when you put it in its proper perspective, now, why would you do anything to cause someone to stumble in any way? And obviously, we're warned not to do that. Many walk, of whom I often tell you, and now are telling you weeping, that they are the enemies of the cross of Christ, whose end is destruction, whose God is their appetite. They run under their sin nature as they maintain their present course in their condition, spiritual condition, is sin unto death awaiting them around the corner, and whose glory is in their shame. The glory, most of these people that do this have some impulse of approbation or power or something like that that's driving them. They want the attention. They want to be more important than the communicator that they're attacking or whatever, who set their minds on earthly things. Set their minds on earthly things. Compare 1 Timothy 6, 20 and 21. Timothy, guard literally the deposit. That whole phrase, what has been entrusted to you, is simply the deposit. That's the good deposit of doctrine. Avoiding worldly and empty chatter and the contradictions, literally, opposing arguments of what is so-called knowledge. It's translated falsely called. So-called knowledge. Oh, I've got the truth for you. Here's what this verse really means. You better take a look, a real close look at it. In fact, if I was you, I'd make them sit down and go through that verse just like I go with you through every verse that we go through, if you want to really protect yourself. Let them show you their work. See? Which some have professed, verse 21, and thus gone astray. They've gone into reversionism in their own right, and they've departed from the truth. Gone astray concerning, literally, the faith. The faith is the passive faith, the Bible doctrine. Grace be with you. Boy, you need that grace, see. Consider all the obstacles that one may face in regards to their Christian life and a pastor in his own ministry in terms of trying to stay on the straight and narrow throughout their entire ministry and throughout their lives. So 67, the recipients of the epistle are to, quote, know, end quote, and thus are warned that this struggle exists for the communicator. 68, hence the need for prayers on his behalf, while being on guard themselves against any undermining the teaching of the pulpit. The Colossians need to be aware of this. As the layperson, you need to be aware of this, that this is there. And as opportunity arises, you can be the target. Obviously, a lot of times they like to pick an observation, those who maybe they see weak in certain doctrines or certain part of their life as targets. You know, those new to doctrine are often the main targets, but not necessarily. But to be on guard for ourselves, to watch over. Therefore, beloved, 2 Peter 3, 14 through 18. Therefore, beloved, since you look for these things, be diligent, be found by him in peace, spotless and blameless, to be found as a complete and mature person, experientially blameless, and regard the patience of our Lord to deliverance, salvation, just as also our beloved brother Paul, Peter says, according to the wisdom given him, wrote to you. I, as also in all his letters, speaking in them of these things, in which are some things hard to understand, which the untaught and unstable distort, as they do also the rest of the scriptures to their own destruction. People come in and they think that they got it all figured out. And Paul has some very complex doctrines. Just what we go through, what we've been through in the epistles we've done in his writings. His understanding and depth of theological understanding is immense. To be able to try to put it all in perspective. And if you can get a handle on a half of it, the depth of your understanding greatly multiplies, really, generally speaking. It's one of those challenges that you just love to have because it taxes you. And you want to understand because you want to know more and more what God will reveal to us that he's willing to do so in our time. As they also, the rest of scriptures, to their own destruction. The people come in and they think they know it. But yet, they can't understand half of the spiritual aspect of it. You therefore, beloved, knowing this beforehand, be on your guard, unless being carried away by the error of unprincipled men, you fall from your own steadfastness, your own stability in regards to your Christian life. Father, again, thank you for the truth of your word. We ask God, the Holy Spirit, to continue to light these things in Jesus' name.